The Worm Ouroboros by E. R. Edison. Part 2 of Chapter 4. And he lighted the candles in the great candlesticks of iron, and opened a little secret door in the wall of the chamber near the floor. And Grow beheld iron bars within the little door, and heard a hissing from behind the bars. The king took a key of silver of delicate construction, the handle slender and 3 spans in length, and opened the iron grated door. And the king said, "Behold and see that which sprung from the egg of a cock, hatched by the deaf adder. That glance of its eye sufficeth to turn to stone any living thing that standeth before it. Were I but for 1 instant to loose my spells whereby I hold it in subjection, in that moment would end my life, days, and thine. So strong in properties of ill is this serpent, which the ancient enemy that dwelleth in darkness hath placed upon this earth to be a bane unto the children of men, but an instrument of might in the hand of enchanters and sorcerers." Therewith came forth that offspring of perdition from its hole, strutting erect on its 2 legs that were the legs of a cock, and a cock's head it had, with rosy comb and wattles, but the face of it, like no fowl's face of Middle-earth, but rather a gorgon's out of hell. Black shining feathers grew on its neck, but the body of it was the body of a dragon, with scales that glittered in the rays of the candles, and a scaly crest stood upon its back. And its wings were like bat's wings, and its tail the tail of an aspic with a sting in the end thereof, and from its beak its forked tongue flicked venomously. And the stature of the thing was a little above a cubit. Now, because of the spells of King Goreis, whereby he held it ensorcelled, it might not cast its baneful glance upon him nor upon Gro. But it walked back and forth in the candlelight, averting its eyes from them. The feathers on its neck were fluffed up with anger, and wondrous swiftly twirled its scaly tail, and it hissed ever more fiercely, irked by the bonds of the king's enchantment, and the breath of it was noisome, and hung in sluggish wreaths about the chamber. So for a while it walked before them, and as it looked sidelong past him, Gro beheld the light of its eyes that were as 6 moons burning poisonously through a mist of greenish yellow in the dusk of night. And strong loathing seized him, so that his gorge rose to behold the thing, and his brow and the palms of his hands became clammy. And he said, "My lord the king, I have looked steadfastly on this cockatrice, and it affrighteth me no whit. But it is loathly in my sight, so that my gorge riseth because of it." And with that he fell a-vomiting. And the king commanded that serpent back into its hole, whither it returned, hissing wrathfully. Now the king poured forth wine, speaking a charm over the cup. And when the bright wine had revived Lord Gro, the king spake, saying, "It is well, O Gro, that thou hast shown thyself a philosopher indeed, and of heart intrepid. Yet even as no blade is utterly tried, until one try it in very battle, where if it snap, woe and doom wait on the hand that wields it, so must thou in this midnight suffer a yet fiercer furnace heat of terror, wherein if thou be reduced, we are both lost eternally, and this Carcy and all Witchland blasted with us forever in ruin and oblivion. Durst abide this trial?" Gro answered, "I am hot to obey your word, O king, for well know I that it is idle to hope by phantoms and illusions to appall the demons, and that against the demons the deadly eye of thy cockatrice were turned in vain. Stout of heart are they, and instructed in all lore, and just a sorcerer of ancient power, who hath charms to blunt the glance of basilisk or cockatrice. He that would strike down the demons must conjure indeed." "Great," said the king, "is the strength and cunning of the seed of Demonland. By main strength have they now shown mastery over us, as sadly witnesses the overthrow of Gorice the 11th, against whom no mortal could stand up and wrestle and not die, till cursed Goldry, drunk with spleen and envy, slew him in the Folia Isles. Nor was there any aforetime to outdo us in feats of arms, and Gorice the 10th, victorious in single combats without number, made our name glorious over all the world. Yet at the last he gat his death, out of all expectation, and by what treacherous sleight I know not, standing in single combat against the curled step-dancer from Crothering. But I, that am skilled in gramarye, do bear a mightier engine against the demons than brawny sinews, or the sword that smiteth asunder. Yet is mine engine perilous to him that useth it." Therewith the king unlocked the greatest of those books that lay by on the massive table, saying in Gro's ear, as one who would not be overheard, "This is that awful book of gramarye, wherewith in this same chamber, on such a night, Gorice the 7th stirred the vasty deep. And know that from this circumstance alone ensued the ruin of Gorice the 7th, in that, having by his hellish science conjured up somewhat from the primeval dark, and being utterly foredone with the sweat and stress of his conjuring, his mind was clouded for a moment in such sort that either he forgot the words writ in this gramarye, or the page whereon they were writ, or speech failed him to speak those words that must be spoken, or might to do those things which must be done to complete the charm. Wherefore he kept not his power over that which he had called out of the deep, but it turned upon him, and tear him limb from limb. Such like doom will I avoid, renewing in these latter days those selfsame spells, if thou durst stand by me undismayed the while I utter my incantations. And shouldst thou mark me fail or waver ere all be accomplished, then shalt thyself lay hand on book and crucible, and fulfill whatsoever is needful, as I shall first show thee. Or quailest thou at this?" Gro said, "Lord, show me my task, and I will carry it, though all the furies of the pit flock to this chamber to say me nay." So the king instructed Gro, rehearsing to him those acts that were needful, and making known unto him the divers pages of the gramarye, whereon were writ those words which must be spoken, each in its due time and sequence. But the king pronounced not yet those words, pointing only to them in the book. For whoso speaketh those words in vain and out of season is lost. And now, when the retorts and beakers with their several necks and tubes and the appurtenances thereof were set in order, and the unhallowed processes of fixation, conjunction, deflagration, putrefaction, and rubification were nearing maturity, and the baleful star Antares, standing by the astrolabe within a little of the meridian, signified the instant approach of midnight, the king described on the floor with his conjuring rod three pentacles enclosed within a seven-pointed star, with the signs of Cancer and of Scorpio joined by certain runes. And in the midst of the star he limned the image of a green crab eating of the sun. And turning to the 73rd page of his great black gramarye, the king recited in a mighty voice words of hidden meaning, calling on the name that it is a sin to utter. Now, when he had spoken the first spell and was silent, there was a deadly quiet in that chamber, and a chill in the air, as of winter. and in the quiet, Grow heard the king's breath coming and going, as of one who hath rode a course. Now the blood rushed back to Gro's heart, and his hands and feet became cold, and a cold sweat brake forth on his brow. But for all that, he held yet his courage firm and his brain ready. The king motioned to Gro to break off the tail of a certain drop of black glass that lay on the table. And with the snapping of its tail, the whole drop fell to pieces in a coarse black powder. Gro, by the king's direction, gathered that powder and dropped it in the great alembic, wherein a green fluid seethed and bubbled above the flame of a lamp. And the fluid became red as blood, and the body of the alembic filled with a tawny smoke, and sparks of sun-like brilliance flashed and crackled through the smoke. Thereupon distilled from the neck of the alembic a white oil incombustible, and the king dipped his rod in that oil, and described round the seven-pointed star on the floor, the figure of the worm Ouroboros that eateth his own tail. And he wrote the formula of the crab below the circle, and spake his second spell. When that was done, yet more biting seemed the night air, and yet more like the grave the stillness of the chamber. The king's hand shook as with an ague, as he turned the pages of the mighty book. Gro's teeth chattered in his head. He gritted them together, and waited. And now through every window came a light into the chamber, as of skies paling to the dawn. Yet not wholly so, for never yet came dawn at midnight, nor from all four quarters of the sky at once, nor with such swift strides of increasing light, nor with a light so ghastly. The candle flames burned filmy, as the glare waxed strong from without. An evil pallid light of bale and corruption, wherein the hands and faces of the king Gorais and his disciple showed death pale, and their lips black as the dark skin of a grape, where the bloom has been rubbed off from it. The king cried terribly, "The hour approacheth!" And he took a phial of crystal, containing a decoction of wolf's jelly and salamander's blood, and dropped seven drops from the alembic into the phial, and poured forth that liquor on the figure of a crab drawn on the floor. Gro leaned against the wall, weak in body, but with will unbowed. So bitter was the cold that his hands and feet were benumbed, and the liquor from the phial congealed where it fell. Yet the sweat stood in beads on the forehead of the king, by reason of the mighty striving that was his. And in the overpowering glare of that light from the underskies, he stood stiff and erect, hands clenched and arms outstretched, and spake the words, "Luro, Vopo, Vir, Voarcadumia." Now with those words spoken, the vivid light departed as a blown-out lamp, and the midnight closed down again without. Nor was any sound heard, save the thick panting of the king. But it was as if the night held its breath in expectation of that which was to come. And the candles sputtered and burned blue. The king swayed and clutched the table with his left hand, and again the king pronounced terribly the word, "Voarcadumia!" Thereafter, for the space of 10 heartbeats, silence hung like a kestrel poised in the listening night. Then went a crash through earth and heaven, and a blinding wildfire through the chamber, as it had been a thunderbolt. All Carcy quaked, and the chamber was filled with a beating of wings, like the wings of some monstrous bird. The air that was wintry cold waxed on a sudden hot as the breath of a burning mountain, and Gro was near choking with the smell of soot and the smell of brimstone. And the chamber rocked as a ship riding in a swell with the wind against the tide. But the king, steadying himself against the table and clutching the edge of it, till the veins on his lean hand seemed nigh to bursting, cried in short breaths and with an altered voice, "By these figures drawn, and by these spells enchanted, by the unction of wolf and salamander, by the unblessed sign of Cancer, now leaning to the sun, and by the fiery heat of Scorpio that flameth in this hour on night's meridian, thou art my thrall and instrument. Abase thee and serve me, worm of the pit, else will I by and by summon out of ancient night intelligences and dominations mightier far than thou, and they shall serve mine ends, and thee shall they chain with chains of quenchless fire, and drag thee from torment to torment through the deep." Therewith the earthquake was stilled, and there remained but a quivering of the walls and floor, and the wind of those unseen wings, and the hot smell of soot and brimstone burning. And speech came out of the teeming air of that chamber, strangely sweet, saying, "Accursed wretch that troubleth our quiet, what is thy will?" The terror of that speech made the throat of Gro dry, and the hairs on his scalp stood up. The king trembled in all his members like a frightened horse, yet was his voice level, and his countenance unruffled, as he said hoarsely, "Mine enemies sail at daybreak from the Foliot Isles. I loose thee against them as a falcon from my wrist. I give thee them. Turn them to thy will. How or where it skills not, so thou do but break and destroy them off the face of the world. Away!" But now was the king's endurance clean spent, so that his knees failed him, and he sank like a sick man into his mighty chair. But the room was filled with a tumult as of rushing waters, and a laughter above the tumult like to the laughter of souls condemned. And the king was reminded that he had left unspoken that word which should dismiss his sending. But to such weariness was he now come, and so utterly was his strength gone out of him in the exercise of his spells, that his tongue clave to the roof of his mouth, so that he might not speak the word. And horribly he rolled up the whites of his eyes, beckoning to Gro, the while his nerveless fingers sought to turn the heavy pages of the grammary. Then sprang Gro forth to the table, and against it sprawling. For now was the great keep of Carcy shaken anew, as one shaketh a dice-box, and lightnings opened the heavens, and the thunder roared unceasingly, and the sound of water stunned the ear in that chamber, and still that laughter pealed above the turmoil. And Gro knew that it was now with the king, even as it had been with Gorice the Seventh in years gone by, when his strength gave forth, and the spirit tear him, and plastered those chamber walls with his blood. Yet was Gro mindful, even in that hideous storm of terror, of the 97th page whereon the king had shown him the word of dismissal, and he wrenched the book from the king's palsied grasp and turned to the page. Scarce had his eye found the word when a whirlwind of hail and sleet swept into the chamber, and the candles were blown out, and the tables overset, and in the plunging darkness beneath the crashing of the thunder, Gro, pitching headlong, felt claws clasp his head and body. He cried in his agony the word that was the word Trutsarikopsem, and so fell a-swooning. It was high noon when the Lord Gro came to his senses in that chamber. The strong spring sunshine poured through the southern window, lighting up the wreckage of the night. The tables were cast down, and the floor strewn and splashed with costly essences and earths, spilt from shattered phials and jars and caskets. Aphroselmia, shell of gold, saffron of gold, asem, amianth, stipteria of melos, confounded with mandragora, vinum ardens, salamoniac, devouring aqua regia, little pools and scattered globules of quicksilver, poisonous decoctions of toadstools and of yew-berries, monkshood, thorn-apple, wolfsbane and black hellebore, quintessences of dragon's blood and serpent's bile. And with these, splashed together and wasted, elixirs that wise men have died a-dreaming of. Spiritus mundi, and that sovereign alkahest which dissolveth every substance dipped therein, and that aurum potabile, which, being itself perfect, induceth perfection in the living frame. And in this welter of spoiled treasure were the great conjuring books, hurled amid the ruin of retorts and aludels of glass and lead and silver, sand baths, matrasses, spatulae, athanors, and other instruments innumerable of rare design, tossed and broken on the chamber floor. The king's chair was thrown against the furnace, and huddled against the table lay the king, his head thrown back, his black beard pointing skyward, showing his sinewy, hairy throat. Gro looked narrowly at him, saw that he looked unhurt, and slept deep. And so, knowing well that sleep is a present remedy for every ill, watched by the king in silence all the day, till supper time, for all he was sore and hungered. When at length the king awoke, he looked about him in amaze. "Methought I tripped at the last step of last night's journey," he said, "and truly, strange riot hath left its footprints in my chamber." Gro answered, "Lord, sorely was I tried, yet fulfilled I your behest." The king laughed as one whose soul is at ease, and standing upon his feet said unto Gro, "Take up the crown of Witchland, and crown me, and that high honor shalt thou have, because I do love thee for this night gone by." Now without were the lords of Witchland assembled in the courtyard, being bound for the great banqueting hall to eat and drink, unto whom the king came forth from the gate below the keep, robed in his conjuring robe. Wondrous bright sparkled the gems of the iron crown of Witchland above the heavy brow and cheekbones and the fierce disdainful lip of the king, as he stood there in his majesty. And Gro, with the guard of honor, stood in the shadow of the gate. And the king said, "My lords Corund, and Corsus, and Corineus, and Galandus, and ye sons of Corsus and of Corund, and ye other witches, behold your king, the 12th Gorais, crowned with this crown in Carcy, to be king of Witchland and of Demonland, and all countries of the world, and the rulers thereof, so many as the sun doth spread his beams over, shall do me obeisance, and call me king and lord." All they shouted assent, praising the king and bowing down before him. Then said the king, "Imagine not that oath sworn unto the demons by Gorais the 11th, of memory ever glorious, bind me any whit. I will not be at peace with this Jus and his brethren, but do account them all mine enemies. And this night have I made a sending to take them on the waste of waters, as they sail homeward to many mountain demon land." Corun said, "Lord, your words are as wine unto us, and well we guessed that the principalities of darkness were afoot last night, seeing all Carcy rocked, and the foundations thereof rose and fell, as the breast of the large earth a-breathing. When they were come into the banqueting hall, the king said, Grow shall sit at my right hand this night, since manfully hath he served me. And when they scowled at this, and spake each in the other's ear, the king said, Whoso among you shall so serve me, and so water the growth of this witchland, as hath grow in this night gone by, unto him will I do like honour. But unto Grow he said, I will bring thee home to Goblin Land in triumph, that wenneth forth an exile. I will pluck Gaslark from his throne, and make thee king in Zajizakulo, and all Goblin Land shalt thou hold for me in fee, exercising dominion over it. End of chapter 4.